I literally started screaming. And I said, are you crazy? Are you utterly crazy? You asked a 21-year-old to start a church? Like, have you lost it?
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
Hi, and welcome to The Profile. This is Premier Christian Radio, and I'm Emma Fowle. The Profile is the show where we get to sit down and chat with a well-known Christian about their life, their faith, and their ministry. It's brought to you in association with Premier Christianity, the UK's leading Christian magazine. If you'd like to check it out, please do head over to premierchristianity.com/podcast for your exclusive half-price subscription offer. Now, today on the show, I am delighted to be joined by Wole Agbaje. Aged just 22, Wole planted his first church, Imprint Leicester, and now, aged just 30, leads Imprint London, a growing, vibrant church right in the heart of London's financial district. Now, you might assume from his early achievements that he always dreamed of leading a church, but in fact, it was quite the opposite. And in this hilarious yet hugely thought-provoking interview, Wole shares how he was literally dragged, kicking and screaming, into the Anglican Church, despite being convinced that there would be no place for a young black Nigerian man, and how he's since seen God move in incredible ways. Plus, we talk about creativity, dreams, singleness, racism, and what he is seeing God do as part of this new quiet revival in the UK church. Wole, it is an absolute pleasure to have you here on The Profile today. Thank you so much for giving us a little bit of your time, especially as I know this week has been particularly manic for you. Tell us what you've been up to this week, a little snapshot of the quiet revival in progress in London.
Yeah, so well, my week started off with a conference that I get to do with some great friends of mine, Saint Church, KXC, Revive, Fusion, and some of our friends and other partners. And it was called the Awakening Project. And essentially, the Awakening Project is all about equipping Gen Z, the next generation, to really be those who can pray and contend for a new move of God in their city. And we had, you know, people from over 25 nations come to our conference, and it was phenomenal. It was so, so good. And then on the final night of the conference, we basically held a joint prayer gathering, and we had over 2,000 people come, literally lining up outside to come and pray throughout the night. So we had the gathering for 12 hours.
Wow. Yeah. 2,000 people queuing up to get into a church to go and pray all night. This sounds mental to me.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy. But the Lord moved so much. Like, the Lord was moving in incredible ways. We had salvations and people experiencing freedom, people being awakened to what God has called them to do, and just fresh imagination and inspiration, people being filled up with the Holy Spirit for the first time. So it was such an incredible time. And then Sunday here at my church, Imprint Church, and we're located actually not too far away from here.
Yeah.
We had our four services, our four gatherings on a Sunday. And then the following day, we had the leadership conference, the Alpha Leadership Conference, for 2 days in the Royal Albert Hall. So it's been a mental week, but glory be to God. Jesus is our strength. The joy of the Lord is definitely with us. Amen.
And you are still just about awake. So thank you so much for coming and chatting to us today. Yeah. We're going to get into all of that later on today. I want to hear all about your church. I want to hear more about what God's doing in Gen Z, about how you got to the point where you were leading these massive joint prayer meetings with three other London churches. But first of all, I'd love you to tell us a little bit about your story, because I mean, we're talking about Gen Z, but really, like, you are how old are you now?
So I just turned 30 a week ago.
So I mean, this is your peer group. You're not like some, you know, 50-year-old church leader looking down in wisdom. This is your generation, and you're at the forefront of this. So tell us how, at 30 years of age, you ended up in church leadership. And it's not your first church, is it? It's your second.
Yeah, my second church. Yeah.
Okay. Now, the rumor I've heard is that you were the youngest Church of England person to plant a church at the age of 22. Is that true?
I actually don't know. People said that to me. Actually, I don't know where to
right, if anyone's listening to this and you planted a church below the age of 22, Please let us know.
But yeah, anyway, let me know, and congratulations.
For now, we're giving you the title.
Okay.
So tell us how you ended up in that position. What did your faith journey look like? Did you grow up in a Christian home?
Yeah, I grew up in a Christian home, and like literally with my family, I remember my parents literally from all the way to 18 years, all the way till the time I finally went to university. Like, we used to wake up at 6 a.m. and Monday to Friday for morning devotional and prayer.
Yes. That's mad.
6 a.m.
That's brilliant. Oh my, like, I'm a parent. I feel convicted right now. That's awesome. That, what an example set.
Yeah, it was.
Was it fun at the time? Or were you like, no, please leave me alone. I would like to sleep.
Yeah, there were moments where I honestly, there were moments where I thought, if I shut my eyes, strong enough, then hopefully my parents will leave me.
No.
But no, they would just carry me.
Wow.
they would carry me to family prayers. And yeah, it was an amazing time. Like, I think one of the moments that really struck me, especially growing up, is just to see how my parents prayed so passionately.
Mm.
That there were moments, even, in the early hours of the morning, like, I saw my parents cry out to God. And I think I knew, first of all, that God was powerful, but God hears our prayers, especially just seeing how fervently my parents prayed and just hearing some of the testimonies in real time. And that really encouraged me at a young age.
And can you remember prayers being answered when
Yes, absolutely. Like, especially just prayers surrounding just family life.
Yeah.
And actually, like, something my parents are some of the most generous people I have ever met, and they constantly have poured out themselves to really serve other people. And many of those prayers were just prayers, contending and interceding for those that they know around them that were struggling and that really needed relief and stuff. And my parents will constantly pray, or even those who are far away from faith, like our neighbors, my parents will pray for them.
Wow.
And we got to see some of them, we got to see some of them know Jesus and enter into relationship with him.
And then what happened when you went to uni? Was it a seamless transition for you? Did you do what most 18 years, I shouldn't say most, what some 18, what I did when I went to university, which was struggled a little bit?
Yeah, so I remember like the summer before university, like I remember having this random thought that, okay, I'm a church boy, I'm a church kid, so literally I can do what, many church kids at the time were doing. They were going to university and reinventing themselves. And I remember actually being tempted by that thought. And as the temptation came, as that thought came to me, I just heard like the Lord say to me, "Would you trust me with your years in university? Would you give your years in university to me?" And I was thinking, I was just there sitting in my room and I was like,
I don't know.
And I had a beautiful summer with the Lord. And I said, okay, God, I'm going to give 3 years of my university experience to you. And I'm going to follow you with all my heart. And I remember that was a deal that I made with the Lord. And I was like, let's see what would happen. At the time, I remember first year, there wasn't like many Christian guy friends that I had. Like, there wasn't, the Christian scene especially on my campus was not big, and especially in terms of like guys and men, it was even smaller and stuff. And so there wasn't many role models in that aspect and stuff. And but I tried to really be faithful, and I remember the Lord giving me like one Christian friend. His name is called Dwayne, and he's actually an artist called Dwayne Caleb. I think Premier has played him many times, and he's one of my closest friends in the world. And I remember when the Lord gave me him as a friend, I was so grateful, and we really just like encouraged one another in our faith and in our journey. And I think my story actually, when it comes to like ministry in general, actually started when I was 19. So I was in my second year of university, and I had a dream of a gospel showcase. And essentially this gospel showcase, the way I can best, like explain it, is that this gospel showcase was like a gospel musical, and it told the story of Jesus through creative means. So there was music, dance performances, and I saw that there were like different light elements and stuff and visual elements. And I just basically saw this whole production. And at the end of the production, I saw there was a evangelistic talk and worship and prayer ministry at the end. And I saw all of this in a dream.
In a dream? This just came dream. To you one night while you were sleeping?
Yeah. And bear in mind, like I am a creative. I sing myself.
Yeah.
But I was studying economics.
Yeah.
So it wasn't my plan to, like, you know, formulate a creative showcase or musical and stuff.
Mm.
But I had this dream, this exact dream, for 7 nights back to back.
Whoa.
Yeah, 7 nights back to back. And because I wasn't a dreamer, it was only on the 7th night that I realized I've had this dream for 7 nights. Maybe God is trying to speak to me.
Oh, so that wasn't the way that God traditionally spoke to you at the time?
No, wow. I wasn't a dreamer at all and stuff. And I was like, maybe God is trying to speak to me, because instantly I remember the story of Joseph. And I was like, okay, God spoke to Joseph in dreams. Maybe he's still speaking to me. Maybe he's speaking to me in my dreams right now. So yeah, like really naively, I knelt down on the side of my bed. I remember holding holding my hands like this. And I was like, God, is this you? Are you trying to speak to me? And yeah, I heard the Lord's voice, and it said, it's me. It's called Imprint, and it's a movement that bring my prodigals back to me.
Wow.
Yeah. So I just wrote down everything that the Lord told me, and I found some of my Christian friends on campus, and I said, guys, would you support me to do this showcase, this musical? Would you help me out? And they were like, yeah, like, sounds cool, let's do it and stuff. And I was like, God gave it to me in a dream. They're like, yeah, sure, let's give it a shot. And honestly, actually that happened 10 years ago, which is so crazy. Yeah, like it happened 10 years ago. And I remember, like, yeah, during that time we only expected 20 people to come. And I remember on the day of the event, we had just finished sound check, and one of my friends ran up to me and he said, Wale, we need to open up the doors now. And I was like, bro, like, calm down. He's like, no, we need to open up the doors now. He's like, the lines are crazy. I'm like, oh, you're joking. Like, you know, this uni is very secular. You know, there's no way the lines are crazy and stuff. But literally, I walked outside and I saw lines all around the university building where we held this event, and down University Road. And I was like, oh my gosh, what on earth is this? Literally, I was so shocked. We expected 20 people.
Wow.
Like, I was so grateful for 20.
Yeah.
We expected 20 people, but 400 students came to this event. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Where did you hold it? Was it in a church? Was it
on
campus?
We actually held it. So every university has like a uni club.
Yeah.
So we actually held it in our uni club.
Nice.
So only God knows what was happening the night before. But
did people know what they were getting into? Did you, you know, did it just say Imprint and people didn't, or did they know?
Yeah, so we called it the Imprint Gospel Showcase.
Ah, cool.
And people knew it was a Christian event.
Yeah.
And I think what surprised me was that people still came.
Yeah.
And it was funny because even though I expected 20 people, I remember the Lord saying to me, I've already prepared the hearts of those who are coming, and I know who I'm sending. And so I just kind of held that as a word of encouragement.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, whoever it is, we'll see what will happen. And so, yeah, we had the event, and we had the production part, and someone had just given it a really beautiful evangelistic talk, speaking about the love of Jesus and how Jesus sets us free from our vices, from our sin, and from our shame, and offers us freedom and mercy. And then we went into a time of worship and prayer. And I was on stage, so I couldn't really see what was happening clearly. So I literally walked off the stage because I was thinking, oh, I'm hearing sounds from like the main auditorium. So I came off the stage, and I literally remember seeing like hundreds of students weeping and crying and repenting of their sins. And literally, it was like the fear of God just filled that place. And, you know, scripture basically talks about, you know, it's the kindness of God that leads us into repentance. And I think because the presence of God was so strong, not only were people confronted by their sin, but also they got to experience a loving God that liberates them from their sin. And it just happened so spontaneously. Like, I remember some of my friends who weren't Christians, they were like, oh, we'll come to this event because, you know, Wally seems like a cool guy and blah, blah, blah. And they were like crying and they were like, you know, God, you know, forgive me. I want to know you. I want to be in relationship with you. And I remember seeing them, I'm like, what on earth happened?
Well, the thing is, like, if you were telling me this happened last week, I'd be like, yes, like, this is what we've been seeing over the last 12 months here, you know, what we've been hearing about since Asbury, really. But, like, we're talking about, like you said, 10 years ago. 2014, we were in the depths of, you know, all these dire, the church's dying statistics. And here you are in Leicester with a group of students who are repenting and experiencing the love and the kindness of God. Falling on their knees.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think maybe God was just giving you a foretaste of what was to come?
Yeah, I think so. And especially because I had never seen young adults impacted like that. So that was very new to me. So I remember that night, I was like, God, what's going on? Like, literally. But I think especially when things like that happen, it's always important that we test the fruit.
Yeah.
And I think the fruit of that evening was that so many people were liberated from so many things, like deep things that held them for a long time, and they experienced the love and freedom of God. And I remember there was so when the event finished, you know, no one wanted to leave, but slowly security started pushing everyone out, like, okay, you know, even the security men were so impacted, they were literally like looking at me, you know, like a deer in the lights, so like, what on earth just happened? Like, they didn't even have the terminology to describe, you know, that evening. But I remember security, and they had kicked everyone out, and they said to me, they said, oh, Wale, first of all, great event. But second of all, could you please help us? Because there's this girl that doesn't want to leave. And I was like, okay, sure. and then I remember there was this young girl. She was basically she had her arms wrapped around this pillar in the auditorium in the club, in the uni club. She had her arms around this pillar, and she was screaming at the security guard, saying, "Don't take me away, please!" Literally screaming and crying, "Don't take me away! I've just met Jesus. Don't take me away, please! I could never leave this place. I don't want to leave. Don't take me away." And then I came alongside her and I said, you do realize Jesus will come with you? And she looked at me like a child, and she was like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I promise he will come with you. And she said, okay. And she took her arms off the pillar and she just walked out. And, you know, that was the fruit of that evening. Like, we saw so many people give their life to Jesus or rededicate their lives to Jesus. And even, you know, the student Christian community grew overnight, you know, even in different churches and stuff. And I honestly thought it was just a one-time thing. I never thought I would be launched into ministry so quickly. If anything, I was trying to repel it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm an econ major. I was like, you know, I'm meant to be, you know, in New York making lots of money and stuff.
So, I mean, you're in the City of London now, in the heart of the financial district, but I doubt that the Church of England priestly salary is quite what you're aiming for when you chose economics.
Yeah, yes, it's very humbling, but we've blessed a lot. I'm grateful anyway.
So tell us about that journey. I've heard you talk about it a little bit before, and you just touched on it there. You weren't exactly, you know, chomping at the bit to become a vicar, were you?
No, not at all. So in my final year of university, so that event happened in my second year of university. And because because of what happened, I guess there was this like expectation that, okay, I was going to do more events, or I was going to do like student ministry and stuff. And I kind of repelled it. I was like, first of all, like, I studied economics, I'm a creative, like, this is not really my vibe. I did this event because God gave me a dream. It was a one-time thing. We keep it moving and stuff. But in my final year of university, I have another dream, like another spontaneous dream, where in my dream, the Lord said to me, go to Holy Trinity Church, Leicester.
That's very specific.
Very specific. And it wasn't like I was going to that church. I was going to like another Pentecostal church and stuff. But the Lord said to me, go to Holy Trinity Church, Leicester. So I was like, So I wake up and I immediately type it into Google and I see it's an Anglican church and I literally gasp. And I was like, God, why do you want to send me to an Anglican church? I was like, you know what the Church of England is like. And I guess like stereotypically, like, you know, the Church of England, especially then, was known for being very traditional, very diverse. And basically the opposite of who I am. Yeah. And I was like, this is definitely not my vibe. No. And I don't think I would even be welcomed, you know, in this church, in this denomination and stuff. Especially because of its history and stuff. And I wasn't unaware of that. So I was so shocked when the Lord said I should go to this church. And I saw that they had a 6:15 service later that day. So I literally skateboarded to the church. And there was like this beautiful worship. And first of all, I was just hit by the presence of God. You know, just that's the beauty of Jesus. And even I remember hearing the vicar at the time, John McGinley, and speak about Jesus. And speak about the heart of Jesus. And I honestly was just so mesmerized, by Jesus. And simply, and the worship was just incredible, and the prayer ministry was so powerful. And I remember thinking, how can this be an Anglican church? Like, this is the opposite of what I thought an Anglican church could ever be like. So I kept on coming back, but I didn't speak to anyone. I would literally come in. I was literally the guy that, let's say, if downstairs wasn't full, I would literally still creep up to the balcony to make sure I don't speak to anyone. So I wasn't trying to be involved.
You were on the margins.
Very much on the margins. Mm-hmm. Like,
I'm not committing to this place. Yes, I don't want to get fully involved.
Absolutely. I was the last person to come and the first person to leave. That was my vibe.
So now, as a church leader, I guess you love those kind of people.
Yeah, I love those people because you're going to be the next person that's ordained. But I remember one week I came to the church and worship started. And I just felt the presence of God really powerfully and actually really tangibly. And I heard the Lord say to me, this is home. And it came with revelation. And I instantly just felt like internally, I knew the Lord was calling me to be an Anglican priest.
Wow.
And I just started crying.
With joy?
No, with bitterness. with utter bitterness, literally. I started crying. I was literally on the floor of that church crying, but I was actually in the balcony, so no one else was in the balcony. But it's so funny because when I told some of my friends this story, they said, I literally remember that day someone crying from the balcony, and I had no idea who it was and stuff. But yeah, I was crying on the floor and I literally was like, God, don't send me to the Church of England. This church is cool, but I don't want to enter the Church of England. There's no way I'm going to be a vicar. What on earth is a vicar? And I literally started naming different denominations and different churches that the Lord could send me to.
Oh, okay.
Literally, I was trying to, like, you know, bargain with the Lord. I'm like, you know, you can send me here, you know.
That never tends to work out well in my experience. I don't know about yours.
It does it and stuff. And I was like, God, you know, but the Lord just kept on saying, this is home, this is home, this is home. And I remember just like screaming, you're ruining my life. Literally, I was like, you're ruining my life. I'm like, I'm a 20-year-old that's just been called to be an Anglican priest. I'm like, you're ruining my life.
You know? Brilliant.
And then to my horror, some of the leaders of the church barely knew who I was, but they were like, but again, they carry so much sensitivity and discernment and stuff, and really trust the voice of God. And they came up to me and they said, we feel like we're meant to offer you the internship program for after you graduate university. And I said, oh, thank you, but no thank you, you know. I'm going to move to New York and I'm going to make lots of money for the kingdom.
Yeah, don't worry, I'll tithe.
Hallelujah. For the kingdom. And they were like, oh, okay, no worries. But what they didn't know is that the Lord gave me like maybe 25 dreams.
Wow.
About doing this internship program. And I was so shocked. I was like, God, like, what are you doing to me? And it got to the point where it was so clear that the Lord was calling me to do this, that I knew that if I didn't do it, I'll be very disobedient, essentially. Mm. And I knew that, especially, you know, someone who calls themselves a Christian, I have to be willing to trust that the Lord knows best for me, even if it's not what I want.
Mm.
So after much resistance, I decided to do the internship program, and I loved it. Like, I thought it was amazing. You know, I grew so much in my faith. I grew so much in terms of my understanding of different gifts and ministry. And I really loved what the Lord was doing in that church and beyond and everything. And during that year, like, I didn't stop dreaming, you know, and I had more dreams. But this time I had dreams around being a young church leader. And I could see in my dream that I wasn't much older than I was at the time. I was literally wearing some of the same clothes and stuff, but I was leading a community. But I just thought it was just so ridiculous. And so my plan was, okay, Wale, don't tell anyone. Literally, if you don't tell anyone, this will never happen. So that was my plan. Don't tell a soul about the dreams you are having. And then after this internship program, even though it's been good, quickly move to New York and stuff. And but one day my vicar called me into his office and he said, Wale, I've been praying about you. I feel like the Lord has spoken to me. And his asked our church and the local diocese, so the Church of England in that area, I feel like the Lord has asked us to support you to start your own church. And I just started screaming.
Bible sales are up. Alpha attendance is up. Young people's interest in God is, you guessed it, up. It's been called a quiet revival, but is it really true? This month, we're bringing you expert analysis and stories galore of God on the move. Enjoy a year's worth of Premier Christianity magazine, including this landmark revival special edition, and full digital access, all for just £30. Visit premierchristianity.com.
I literally, and I'm normally a very reverent person, but I literally started screaming. And I said, are you crazy? Are you utterly crazy? You asked a 21-year-old to start a church? Like, have you lost it? And stuff. Like, literally, like, those were basically my words.
Wow.
And he said to me, he says, Wale, I know it sounds crazy, but has God spoken to you? And when he asked me that question, all of my dreams came back to memory.
Yeah.
And I literally just started, you know, like, freaking out. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is like some divine conspiracy. Like, I didn't even want to be an Anglican.
I didn't want to be a priest.
I didn't want to be a priest. I didn't want to lead a church. I'm like, I don't even want to enter ministry. I'm like, how on earth have I moved from studying economics with a dream to move to the US to now being in Leicester with the prospects of leading a church, an Anglican church?
Yeah. It sounds crazy.
Literally.
And the thing is, like, I mean, the way you tell it is absolutely hilariously honest, and I love it. You know, I like it when church leaders can be honest. I think we need more of it in the church. But, like, behind that, you know, genuinely, like, let's get serious for a second. There's a lot of cost there for you, isn't
absolutely.
There?
And absolutely.
At 21, you've basically laid down all of your hopes, dreams, and probably even part of your sense of your identity or what you wanted your identity
absolutely.
To be.
Absolutely.
In order to actually get to grips with something that was clearly quite distressing for you.
Absolutely.
And what God was calling you to do.
Absolutely. No, it was, because I think at that time, I couldn't deny that. I couldn't deny the fact that God called me to start a church. What I wrestled with was, God, why are you calling me out of all people to start a church?
Yeah.
Because I thought, honestly, I thought to myself, well, first of all, you know, I'm a young guy. I'm a young guy. I'm a single guy. I haven't yet found, you know, my wife and stuff. And I think especially like growing up in the Pentecostal stream and stuff, like I rarely saw like leaders leading by themselves and stuff. So there was that aspect. And then I thought also that the Church of England is not, I didn't see much diversity.
Yeah.
So I was like, as a young black Nigerian guy, like it's a really space for me. And also like, my theology is very charismatic and stuff. I'm like, okay, would that be welcomed as well? And I'm also a creative person and everything. And I know, like, even in what I said, maybe it sounds like massive generalizations, but that was my honest belief system. I was like, I respect the Church of England, but I don't know if I would be embraced and welcomed by the Church of England and stuff. So, yeah, it was... it was horrifying to hear.
Well, that's really interesting, because I mean, reflecting on this interview when I was doing my prep, one of my reflections was, if you were a woman, that would probably be the first question people would often ask you. How do you do this by yourself? You're single, you're young. So, you know, in the interest of equality, I feel like, you know, that how do you feel that about that as a single man? Does it make a difference? Is it hard by yourself? Does it give you more time and more freedom? What are the pros and cons?
Yeah, so I think honestly, it has...
Do people look at you sideways? Is there, like, you know, I've seen in films before, like, people have gone into politics and they're like, you need a wife. Like, you know, like why aren't you married? Do you get that?
Yeah, so what's really interesting, because, like, the truth is, like, I would love a family of my own one day and
you
everything.
You should be careful what you say. There's some radio, you know, you might get inundated now.
No, but, like, that is something that, like, you know, like, I would love and that would obviously be open to and everything and stuff. I think, especially as a young adult and stuff, I think, you know, many young adults strive for marriage, strive to find, you know, someone for the rest of their lives and everything and stuff. And I believe it's such a beautiful gift that God gives people and stuff. And some people are called to singleness, or some people do live lives of singleness for the rest of their lives and stuff. But I think especially if you are someone who actually does get married, I think what tends to happen as a young adult is that you tend to squander your single years, and you tend not to, I don't want to sound too economical, but you tend not to be efficient with your single years and stuff. And the beauty of like being single is that you can like radically pour your heart out in service to God and to other people. Like in one aspect, it's like you don't have a divided heart, or you don't have like, you know, under covenant, this responsibility to like to put someone first above all things and stuff. And I feel like because I started leading as a single guy, like I just had that privilege of really loving God with all my heart, serving him and with everything, and also loving the people around me that I got to walk with and I got to do life with as well. And especially when I do have my family of my own, I'm going to be so grateful, forever grateful for those years, and to actually think that the fruit of that season was two church plants and, you know, everything that we're seeing now and also those who came alongside me. Like I'm so grateful to God and stuff, and I wouldn't have it any other way and stuff. So Yeah.
Well, two church plants. You've said it now. What happened with the second church plant? You're 22. You've got a church in Leicester.
Yeah.
What comes next?
Yeah. So 22, have a church in Leicester. To my surprise, the church was going well. And it was growing. And I guess just to kind of like tell a story about that church. So we literally started in the basement of a pub. Like, it was all that we could afford at the time. Like, literally, our first PA system was, you know, like a street preacher. You know how they have, like, that audio system. That was our first PA system. And we fit all of our audio equipment into this suitcase that we would call the planter suitcase and stuff. And we would literally walk from, like, one part of the city centre to another with our audio equipment to set up for church. And there was only, like, you know, 12 people. Like, we started off with, like, six core people, and then it grew to 12 and stuff. And there was only, like, a few people in the room. And especially, like, I grew up in a great church, and I grew up in a great church that had, like, they carried excellence in every aspect and stuff. And I think in the type of churches that I was a part of, I saw the amazing sound system, the amazing lights, the amazing coffee and everything. And I remember looking around at what we had and even looking at our audio system, knowing that this audio system is going to make my voice sound like Darth Vader, you know.
You're like, this is not what I hope for.
Yeah, I think, honestly, like, I didn't have any of those attractional things that sometimes at churches we rely on to actually pull people into our church and stuff. And I remember saying to the Lord, you know, during one of our first gatherings, I said, God, there's so many great churches in this city, like, you know, look at what we have and stuff. Why do you want us to start a church? And the Lord said to me, there's many people in this city that haven't found a spiritual home. So that's why I asked you to start this church. So honestly, I held those words as a prophetic word. And I held it in my heart. I said, okay, God, I'm going to trust those words and stuff. And I said, okay, God, how do you want to build this church? And the Lord simply said to me, pray for people. Pray for people. So practically as a team, and we would gather together, six of us would gather together, we would ask the Lord, okay, God, you know, what do you want to do in this service, in this gathering? You know, who are the people that you really want to minister to, what they're going through and stuff. And essentially we would just share those words in a service, and anyone who it resonated with, we'll ask them to come forward and we'll pray for them. But so many people started to encounter God so powerfully. People were getting healed, people were getting set free, and just really encountering God in amazing ways. And that's how our church actually grew. It grew from testimonies. Like, I remember being, like, walking through one of the campuses one day, and there was a young girl who basically was speaking to her group of friends, and she didn't know I was walking past, but she was speaking to a group of friends, and she said, oh my gosh, I went to this place called Imprint last night. And her friends were like, oh, I've heard, you know, things about that church. Like, what was it like? And she was like, I've never encountered God like that in my life. And it kind of reminds me of the Samaritan woman, you know, who after meeting Jesus, she runs into her town and says, come and meet a man that told me everything I ever did and stuff. And our church really grew from testimonies. Like, let's say a person would come first and God will dramatically meet them. And then next week they have brought five or six of their friends and stuff. So that's how it kind of like grew so quickly over a short time period. So that's why I said earlier, I was surprised it was going well and stuff. And just also, prayer works. Prayer is powerful. Like, let's take a risk and pray for people. But yeah, 8 months into our church planting journey, we started getting, you know, prophetic words about planting a church into London. And the Lord started speaking to me personally about planting a church into London. And I honestly thought it was so ridiculous. I said, God, you know, it's a miracle this church in Leicester is going well. Like, London is so far-fetched. Let's just be grateful for what's going on here. But one of the final confirmations for me was a student who was in my small group. And she came to me. She said, Wale, I couldn't focus in my lectures today because the Lord was keep on showing me visions of us planting a church into London.
Wow.
And she had no idea what we were trying to discern as a team behind the scenes. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, let's try. What can we do that will basically, what can we do that would essentially prophetically partner with this picture and with this vision that God has given us? So we said, okay, let's do one of our showcases. Let's do one of our musicals for the first time outside of Leicester. And let's have one in London. So I think the first one that we had in London was in the summer of 2018. And we kind of put the word out there and we probably attracted like 300 young adults and stuff. Wow. And just even their families as well. People came with kids and everything. And similar things happened to the first ever showcase. And yeah, many people met Jesus. And out of that, we just started a small group, a small group of city workers that just met week upon week. Some of our guys who were with us in Leicester, Benita and Bernard, they had moved down to London and they started leading this small group in the heart of the city of London. And over that year, it just continued to grow to maybe like between 30 to 40 people. And then a year later, with that 30 to 40, we planted Impen Church London down the road in Bank, and we grafted into the parish of St. Mary Woolnoth, St. Edmund the King, and St. Clement's East Cheap. So we're one parish, but we're three beautiful Grade 1 listed buildings that have their complications, but we bless God.
Yeah, and you really are. I mean, you know, for those of you listening that may not know London very well, you really are literally right in the heart of the financial district, aren't you? Right next to the old Bank of England. And it's a very, very historic church with a very special history, isn't it, St. Mary's?
Yes, yeah.
What does that mean to you personally?
Yeah, it's kind of amazing because when we were first offered to plant into that parish, because I really felt like the Lord was calling us to plant into the City of London. And when we were given the privilege to actually plant a church in that parish and stuff, and I'm now the priest in the parish and stuff, I actually didn't know the history. So when I actually got to know the history, I was like, God, this is bonkers, and I'm just in awe. So essentially my predecessor as a priest was a man called John Newton.
some of you may know.
And John Newton, I believe in the 18th century, led basically my parish church. And he's famous for writing, you know, an iconic hymn called Amazing Grace about his own personal testimony. Yeah. And John Newton was a slave trader. And he was someone that was pardoned, as he would say, and forgiven for his sins. And he became a clergyman. He became a priest. And he wanted everyone to know about the amazing grace of Jesus Christ and how the Lord delivers and saves even, you know, he uses the word in the hymn, a wretch like me uses those who have done just atrocious things. But what I love so much about Newton's legacy is that in the time of him being a priest, again, in my parish church, he mentored a young politician called William Wilberforce. And Wilberforce was the politician that successfully campaigned for the abolition of slavery. So that's kind of like the history of my parish. And I guess also to just be a black man, to also now be the priest of that parish and stuff, is also such, yeah, it's such a privilege. And for us to have such a diverse community in that parish, I just feel like it's so redemptive of God. And the Lord was already writing a story, and a bunch of kids got to be a part of that story as well.
So talk to me a little bit about your congregation. I'm guessing, you know, like, you know, if you wander around this area, like you said, you're literally around the corner from our offices, right in the heart of the financial district. There's not a lot of residential accommodation, is there? There's a lot of office blocks and pubs and, you know, commercial premises, but not a lot of family homes, let's say. So I'm assuming, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you lead a congregation which is by and large made up of a lot of young people, single people, city workers, people who are fairly ambitious, clever, talented.
Very clever.
What's that like? It's like a whole congregation of alpha type characters.
Yeah, it's so much fun. I love my congregation so much.
I mean, you have to say that.
I really do. I honestly, it's such a privilege to lead the church. I think even if I wasn't leading, I would just be so happy to be a part of the church. Like, they inspire me. I think being a Christian in London, in the financial district in London, is so crazy. And to see many of them with such a fervent faith, literally resisting the culture around them, and trying to be faithful to Jesus with His grace, is so remarkable. And so I guess our congregation really compromises of young professionals, students, youth, and creatives, and also we also have like quite a few older professionals as well, but there is a lot of professionals and stuff. And
does it have a high turnover? Is that a challenge? Is it like a church that people tend to pass through rather than it being their home for 20 years? Or
So we've been there for 5 years. Yeah. So I think what's interesting is that, you know, especially I heard so many people in city like ours, so many people talk about the transience of the city. And, you know, like I remember when I first said I wanted to plant a church, or I feel like God is calling me to plant a church in the City of London. You know, so many respectable leaders told me that, you know, that's crazy, it's not residential, actually the City of London is a graveyard of church plants, as one clergyman told me. But I just felt like the Lord said, you know, will you still obey me? And I think what people didn't realize, but the Lord actually knew, is that, yeah, frankly, there's just people who are hungry for him and people who are desperate for him. Practically, because we are in the city, all of our small groups are actually as well in the City of London. So we have it in our church grounds and stuff. And I guess most parishes and even Imprint Leicester, they all had it. We always did small groups in people's homes. But because London is such a, you know, awkward city, people have, you know, awkward housing dynamics and stuff. People, because of the business and the pace of the city, and even like, you know, how the hours that people have to work, they couldn't get back home quick enough and stuff. So we decided, okay, we're going to have our small groups in the city. And instantly, like, so many people started coming. And I remember one of our early small groups, a lawyer walked in, and when she saw everyone and when she sat in the session, she just started crying.
Wow.
And I said, "Are you okay?" And she said to me, "You know, I am just so grateful that you guys planted a church here." Because she said, "I spend 6 days of my week here. I'm barely at home. My home is like a hotel room. But it's so great to actually do a community. It's so great to be a part of a community in the place where I work and in the place where I socialize. I can finally really have my faith strengthened in that same place."
Yeah.
And, you know, I just feel like that, you know, perfectly summarizes the opportunity that we have.
Yeah.
Because, you know, people historically work in the city for a long time, it means that we get to have a lot of touch points with them. So I don't think we experience the same level of transience as, you know, other major cities, because we are literally in the same place where people work, where people socialize and everything. And really, because London's it's getting more and more expensive, people are actually not spending that much time at home and stuff. So I think that was just one opportunity that we got to really I don't want to use the word capitalize on.
it is an interesting way of looking at it, though, yeah. isn't it? Because I think historically we've looked at church communities as sort of, you know, like when you look at the parish model, even absolutely. You're looking at where people live,
absolutely.
And you're thinking this is what makes a community.
Absolutely.
When actually, yeah, if you do live yeah. and work in a big city, sometimes yeah. like you spend far more time at your place of work than you do where you put your
absolutely.
Head down at night.
Especially
so
if you're a lawyer.
Comes there. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, our definition of community or our perspective of community has radically shifted. It's not just where we live. And frankly, nowadays it's where we work, it's where our local gym is. Like, you know, running clubs are so popular.
Which you have one of, by the way.
Yes,
England has a running club.
Yeah. Yes, it's called Billy the Roads.
Nice.
And they definitely Billy the Roads.
Love it.
Yeah. Some of them recently participated in the London Marathon.
Amazing.
Shout out to Kem, you did so well. I'm happy you survived in your life.
So let's talk about Asbury, because I know that you went out there.
So I actually didn't go out there.
No, you didn't go?
No. Okay. But my friends went out
there.
Some
of your very close friends did.
Yes,
you know, the lovely Al Gordon over at Saint has written for us and told about how it changed him and his church.
Yeah.
But it's had a fairly big impact on your church as well, hasn't it? And how you work together with other London churches. What has been the biggest change for you that you've seen in the last couple of years since Asbury kicked off and we saw all these shoots of renewal or revival or whatever we want to see it happening?
Such a good question. I think one of the biggest changes that I've seen, one of the biggest things that stood out to me is that I think what happened after the Asbury outpouring, because of the Asbury outpouring and just what the Lord is doing now, it's really broken up the tribalism that many of our churches were in. Because I think, like, you know, I'm just slightly older than Gen Z. I think literally a year older, you know, but I'll be considered a millennial. And again, not to generalize, I think like millennials historically, even in the Christian space, were quite tribalistic. It's like, this is my church. This is my parish. You know, God moves here and stuff. Whilst Gen Z, you know, they're not trying to subscribe to a church or a movement. They're trying to subscribe to Jesus. And I think that is so beautiful and it's so humble, because I think what Asbury really showed us was that it's not just about one movement. It's not about one, you know, celebrity worship leader or voice or speaker. It's about Jesus and Jesus alone. And I think especially in terms of how it impacted my church and my friends' churches, so Imprint, Saint and KXC, I think, I guess, like, especially, we are all geographically close. We roughly reach the same demographic of people, and we're all, you know, Anglicans and stuff. So in one aspect, you know, and we really could have been seen as rivals. And, you know, especially like when people have their church list, like.
Yeah, you're all Anglicans, but you're all on that kind of quite cool, trendy, charismatic end of Anglicanism as well, aren't you? So if you're in London, you want to go to a Church of England church looking for somewhere a little bit more lively and cool, perhaps, dare we say it. Yes, I can see where the comparison may come in.
Yeah, so a lot of comparisons and stuff. And I think, honestly, between us, the Lord just humbled all of that. And the Lord just really, like, you know, like squeezed out all the subtle rivalry, the subtle tribalism and stuff. And I think what's so beautiful is that around Asbury, all three of our churches were experiencing, like, mini outpourings of our own, where the Lord was moving in power and many people were coming to faith in the most beautiful ways, and where there was like spontaneous confessions and people being set free and stuff. But I think one thing that we realized was that the Lord was calling us to come together to really pray. And there was many different confirmations. Pete, maybe if you would happen one day, Pete basically receives, you know,
Pete Hughes at KXC.
Even he had like this like prophetic word sent to him 5 years ago.
Wow.
Of him with two other leaders coming together to pray for awakening in London. And this was even, Pete only heard about this prophetic word after our first joint prayer gathering, because we had already discerned that actually I feel like the Lord wants us to join forces to pray and to gather together to pray, to see awakening in London, to see a new generation come to Jesus and beyond, to see generations come to Jesus. But we only expected, again, at the most, 100 people. And I think that gathering, and 100 people is a good number.
Yeah.
But we didn't
getting
expect
young people in church to pray.
Yeah, literally, yeah. Literally. We're like, okay, prayer meeting.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and there was nothing flashy in the branding. It's called Joint Prayer Gathering.
You didn't make a video.
Yeah, you know, it's nothing, you know, it was nothing flashy.
Yeah.
And again, because we didn't necessarily know what we were doing, we're just trying to step out in obedience that, okay, these three communities that I guess historically would have had a lot of comparison, join together and let's actually pray. Join our communities together to pray for a new move of God in the city. And on that first night, I think we saw between 500 to 600 people. Wow. And we were shocked to see how many people powerfully experienced God, powerfully were released to be evangelists in their local sphere, and also set free from lots of different things, which was so gorgeous. And we've been doing these gatherings for 18 months, so we probably do one like every other month and stuff. And to think that our last gathering had 2,000 people, you know, we're just like, God, you are doing something.
Yeah.
You're doing something in this time. And I'm not just going to pull it down to us and stuff, you know, but there were many movements, there were many churches all over London that were praying. And, you know, 2 years ago, we really felt like the Lord was really putting on our hearts to pray for the next generation, to see an awakening in the next generation. And it was like a matter of urgency and stuff. And to now see that 2 years later, the statistics of those who now believe in God in London is crazy. Like in the last 2 years, it jumped from, I believe, like 25% to now over 50% of Gen Z who now believe there's a God, you know?
Yeah. In our last few minutes, what would you say is the biggest challenge for the church going forward at this moment in time? What do we need to do to really grasp what God is doing, and what do we need to address?
So there's this theological term called syncretism. I hope I pronounced that properly. And syncretism is essentially when, I guess if I was to use my own definition, it's when like the surrounding culture dictates our theology. And I think that's just one thing that the church needs to be careful of, because, you know, many young people are exploring what truth is, exploring who this real and living God is. And I think we just need to be careful that the church doesn't sound like the rest of the world, and that we stay true to the unchanging, beautiful truth of Jesus Christ that saves lives. And I think if the church continues on that path in terms of staying faithful to scripture, then I think we will see more and more people set free from so many things and experience the love and the freedom of Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Bless
it's been
you.
An absolute pleasure to have you here with us.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.